Thanks for joining Impact Boom. On this episode,
I would say self-awareness is key. Listening, communication, and doing business well really requires many skills, but we're mostly focused on the knowledge gaining and the technical ways around doing things organizationally or operationally. And we fail sometimes to see how important it is to develop people. It's not so sanctioned to be about self-development, so to speak.
Welcome to impactboom.org. We search the globe to find the people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you create maximum positive impact. Each week, Impact Boom brings you thought-provoking interviews with world-leading practitioners passionate about creating positive social change. These designers, social entrepreneurs, educators, innovators, thinkers and doers share their projects, initiatives, thoughts and insights on creating a better world. You can find all the stories, links and other great content at impactboom.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter for the latest updates, or subscribe to the newsletter or on iTunes. Thanks for listening to episode 474 of Impact Boom. My name's Tom Allen and I'm passionate about bringing you the latest interviews and insights to help you create positive social impact. Today we're speaking with Lisa Hoff. Lisa Hoff is a passionate and enthusiastic professional coach, advisor, consultant and program trainer. Her company, Lisa Hoff Coaching and Consulting, is a certified B Corp committed to empowering people and business for good of humanity. She works with individuals and companies to develop leaders, enhance performance and create well-being and fulfillment in the workplace. She works in what she calls the human dimension of business, because people power is at the core of the success of every business or enterprise. As a champion for people, Lisa's coached hundreds of individuals on their journey of self and career development, but also supporting them at the critical times of challenge or conflict to manage to a better outcome for themselves and others, thereby impacting many lives and workplaces along the way. Lisa's a self-proclaimed visionary who traffics in both possibility and positivity. She's an aficionado of life more generally, a yogi and tennis player, an outdoor enthusiast, trained chef and wine lover, and is known for hosting fabulous dinner parties. Lisa's unwavering commitment to making a difference in people's lives and creating impact follows her wherever she goes. So Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Tom. I'm so excited to be invited to come and talk with you and your audience. And I'm a little nervous.
That's only normal, Lisa. And look, I'm excited too. After we met at the B Corp Assembly a month or two or three ago, and, you know, having our conversations down there were just hugely valuable. So it's great to be chatting now. So kicking things off, Lisa, tell us a little bit more about your background and what it was that led to this passion of yours in leadership, performance, and well-being.
My journey and passion is really for people and learning and nurturing, actually. So it really all started with being born to two inquisitive and intrepid educators. Mm. Father was an amazing man. He was an Air Force fighter pilot and helicopter rescue pilot, but later on in life was an educator. So that's when I came around. I'm the last of five children. But we traveled a lot, and that's really what defines my life, I think, having a lot of exposure globally. So I lived and worked all over the world, first with my family in Point Barrow, Alaska. I think that was my most illustrious and foreign experience so far. Wow. And we lived in the Philippines, again, with his work. And I was just always fascinated and exposed to so many different cultures and people that I really got interested in their development and behavior. Mm. And as an adult, I did decades of work in transformational and personal development. So that really grounded me for everything that I do. But I had a professional stint. I had a lot of roles following university. I worked for Jimmy Carter in his think tank at my university. Yeah. I worked with Ted Turner in marketing at one of his first cable TV station. I worked in the manufacturing sector, in the international sector at the OECD in Paris. And then I was the community liaison officer at the embassy, U.S. Embassy in China. Mm. So had so many roles. You know, I also worked in several environmental organizations because I had a very early experience that really connected me to the concern for the environment. Mm. I think myself more as an entrepreneur, actually. So I've had a number of exciting entrepreneurial adventures, most notably founding a wine touring company when I lived in South Africa.
Wow.
And I used to do exclusive tours to this beautiful place for really a decade, the better part of a decade. Wasn't a terribly successful business venture. My husband used to refer to it as a charitable venture for wealthy wine enthusiasts. and again, it was a passion project. And you know what? I've always been passionate about my work and doing things that really had me contributing and being alive. But you know what? I think I also like to say, I think in this realm of supporting people, probably my most critical role or principal role for much of my adult life, I didn't chase a career early on. I was really a mother, most importantly, a partner, and my husband as a U.S. diplomat and consultant later meant we traveled all over the world. And I've spent so much of my life overseas from my country of origin. I'm originally from the U.S. You can probably tell from my accent. But anyway, exposed to so much diversity and organization, situation, people, often behind the scenes, you know? So I got really a rich understanding of leaders, particularly. So this has all really informed me and my work, deeply impacting how I help people. It's really a gift having a broad array of perspectives to call on when you're supporting people in their own journey of learning. Yeah. And I didn't become a professional coach, believe it or not, until only 12 years ago. But I'm doing my best work. And I was mostly led there in a pathway because of all the people that I had been influential around most of my life said, you know what you do best is help people, and you're an amazing coach. You need to do that work. So I got into that professional journey and have started sort of what's really for me the first time in my life, a real career.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a rich journey of life experience, Lisa. I just relate so much to the value of travel and living in other places and having all those experiences. So it's wonderful to hear that we share that. So tell us a bit more then about this passion of yours now, the work that you're doing as a coach and consultant.
Yeah. So what undergirds all my work is a commitment to empowering people. It's a core value. So you get connected to your core values. Mine are empowering people, love. You know, I really kind of think of my work as a work of love because I just love people. And I also champion them. It's a really critical value. For me, I see people, I see their best, you know, so it's really important to be able to see the gold in people rather than relate to their problems or issues, especially if you're interested in helping them. You know, I've been coaching professionally, as I said, for 12 years now. And most of that in the business space has been with one key client. And funnily enough, 10 years later, I'm still their performance coach. They're a key company in the technology sector. And it's an amazing company. And it's sometimes hard to know the impact you have, but it's just a very healthy environment. And mostly because this company values the developing its people. And that's one key area. You know, I have coaching clients on the side, mostly executives or people in a level of leadership in business who all come to me through referral. You know, I don't serve a lot of people, but I like to think that who I serve, by serving leaders, I get to impact a broader workplace environment or a community. Yeah. The other thing I'm really passionate about and only discovered during COVID, I guess you could say, was I'm certified as a positive intelligence coach. And I love the work that Positive Intelligence, the organization, and Shirzad Shamin did with his PQ mental fitness program. So I facilitate that program and coach in that work. But this work is grounded in neuroscience and cognitive behavioral psychology. Again, the things I love learning about, but I find it's really important from one key area. It helps people build fundamental skills in self-awareness, manage their inner dialogue and emotions. And this isn't the stuff we mostly talk about that impacts our performance or our success. You know, and it's really key for people to operate effectively when they have tools to interrupt reactivity and learn how to be conscious in the way they operate. You know, we all have messy lives and we can't pretend they're not there, but that's usually the work I do, right? I also really love the world of business, and I'm a real cheerleader for the B Corp movement. As you would know, I'm recently certified as a B Corp myself, but I work as a B consultant. And so I love advising businesses who are on that journey of impact and demonstrating their ethics and their responsibility as businesses. Where that intersects, the best thing for me is when I get to coach leaders who are really up to something and who are forging a new way of doing business. So I can't say I do that exclusively, but I would love the expanse of my work to grow more there.
Yeah.
The last thing I kind of want to say about me and my work is that I think of it as the ethos of being interested in people. Leaders, to operate from the highest good, they have to work on themselves and manage their well-being and learn how to approach challenges. So, you know, it's critical to know your values and to understand how you're motivated. Everybody knows this thing called growth mindset, but are they really deeply connected to how to have it and how to operate from it? So anyway, supporting people in their personal growth and development is really my leverage point for having impact. And my love of people and helping them be their best is really at the fundamentally what I do.
Yeah, you make some fantastic points about that consciousness, right? And that cross-section, I think, of work you do with the positive intelligence as well is really interesting. So what have you then observed, Lisa, as some of the most important traits of impact-led leaders and entrepreneurs who are working in this business for good space? Is it that ability to really identify what it is that drives and be conscious of how they react, their traumas, their other things as human beings? What do you think about these traits?
Well, as a coach, like, you delve into the messy bits of life, you know? And leaders, they face unique challenges, particularly of how to go there when they have to be a particular persona or hold up a certain kind of way of operating.
Yeah.
You know, they can't show their messy selves in their workplace. They have to be leaders, but they're just as human as anybody else. So yes, the needing a safe space to explore, be real, see things the way they are, and then enabling them to come back with much more consciousness into, you know, and with the people and the enterprise or the endeavors they're serving, I would say self-awareness is key. Listening, communication, and doing business well really requires many skills, but we're mostly focused on the knowledge gaining and the technical ways around doing things organizationally or operationally. And we fail sometimes to see how important it is to develop people. It's not so sanctioned to be about self-development, so to speak, you know, in the workplace, for example. Leaders and all people who are really influencing others, they've got to have those tools. And it's really critical to being present, learning how to understand the stuff that's going on in the background and how you listen to people. I mean, it's all into this large bucket called self-awareness. And, you know, like, again, with this reference to positive intelligence and why I like it so much, it's a super simple framework. And most people don't think of themselves as being a bundle of reactivity. But when it really boils down, because of the way our brain works, you mostly are. And I love leading this program because, you know, we don't get to talk about, because of the social conventions around politeness and all that, we don't necessarily talk about real stuff often. But when you, a foundational piece for communication really in, and why I lead the program, is it gives people the opportunity to sort of examine their operating system. If you think of your brain as an operating system and the very engine that enables us to do everything else, when it's clouded up with reactivity or we're constantly interacting with other people's mess, not who they really are, there's a big cost to effectiveness, you know, for people in life, but also in the workplace. So I love the saboteur assessment that kind of shows everyone the functioning of the brain and the thought patterns that exist. And when you do it, you get to see sort of the landscape of the saboteurs that you're, it's a self-assessment, so that, that you would say you're colored by, but how you bring mindfulness to and certain techniques really to shift your brain patterns, that's, the, you know, all the work of the mental fitness program. And, you know, everyone I've taken through this six-week program is blown away to discover how often their automatic brain patterns are actually running the show rather than being really clear and conscious in their thinking and how they interact.
Great, so, great point.
Anyway, I feel like I'm preaching, but I've seen in the last 4 years the real power of going where most people don't go and how it relates to productivity or effectiveness or people's real ability to get things done.
Very, very interesting insights, Lisa. And it's a great segue too, because I recently wrote a LinkedIn article, which I'll try and tag within your article so that the audience can have a look at this too. And it was inspired by this conversation that we had. I think it was probably the first night of this B Corp assembly. And the topic of conversation was really, when we boil down to it, around these energy leaks, right? So where have you been seeing leaders most commonly leaking energy, and how might they improve their well-being and become more effective and efficient in the, you know, in their work and their life and their leadership?
I love that you tagged that term. I don't know if I got it from somewhere else or if it's just something I came up with. But first of all, I love the article you wrote. And I would say that it is critical to spotlight connection and well-being in the workplace, particularly for leaders. Mm. And I go one step further and assert that overt or covert, there are deleterious effects that sort of happen with burnout and overwhelm and disconnection that we're often not paying attention to. But to answer your question, I think leaking energy really comes mostly in relationships. Mm. And just to reiterate the idea of leaky energy, you know, from my perspectives, because I'm writing about it now and it's really important to highlight, is that we have sort of incomplete or unaddressed, maybe unresolved issues hanging around in the background. And it can impede our effectiveness, really, in this sort of sleuth-like manner. And why is that? It's really because while you think you've set something aside, there's a challenge that's happened, you're irritated or you've gotten upset. And, you know, to be on purpose about your work or whatever, you think that because you're not actively dealing with it, you could be lulled into the thought, really, that it isn't, you know, it isn't having an effect in your mental landscape. But quite contrary to that, there is always a current of drain that happens, you know, psychically, really, when things are left unsettled and unaddressed.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to call that the nature of that incompletion. And it can take a massive toll on relationships when we leave things unaddressed. And with people not wanting to deal with conflict, I like to see conflict as, you know, this fantastic access point or opportunity for when you get to the other side of it, it's gold. You mature a relationship, you deepen a relationship when you deal with conflict. And yet what most people's inclination is to avoid it. Mm. But avoiding it means that stuff gets swept under the carpet, that proverbial phenomenon we all know about, but we don't often recognize. We think if it goes away, then it's not messing with things. But quite truly it is. And I'll say that when relationships in the workplace or anywhere else are rife with incompletions because people swept things under the carpet rather than addressing them, dealing with them and getting to the other side, which often requires mediation or support in some way because not everyone has the tools of communication to deal with that, it leads to a decline in relationships. And the rub is that we often blame other things for the decline in a relationship. Or we just let things fade away. We don't realize all those interpretations we're left with or those, you know, nauseating views we have of people that aren't really who those people are. It's just the story your brain makes up about it to, you know, make sense of the fact that you don't really want to be relating with that person anymore.
Yeah.
This is an emotional energy bleed, and leaking energy in the domain of relationships, that's what I've described. But it happens for a lot of things. And I think the access is to look at how much conflict do you turn away from? How much incompletion do you let exist? And noting that if those things are a slow bleed to your energy, then it's worthy of taking stock and paying some attention.
Oh, such great points, Lisa. I really, really value those insights and just think, yeah, I think it's a great point for reflection for, you know, the founders, the leaders and those that are out there seeking change. So I'm going to change topic a little bit because I'm curious to get your thoughts on the broader growth of this business for good movement. Because what I've observed, at least, is that there's these range of certifications and different silos that are operating across this space. And so I'm wondering where you see there are key opportunities to grow the purpose-driven business movement and what it is that we need to do to take this mainstream.
This is a challenging question, a really good one, of course. But I noticed, because I knew you were going to ask this question, I've listened to many of your podcasts, but I find it hard to comment on the siloing effect, number one. And I think it's because I focus so much on the micro.
Yeah.
While I know it's important to helicopter above and look at the macro, this is going somewhere because I have thought about this anyway. Focusing on human dynamics has me in the micro, looking at things that then have a flow-on effect, right?
Yeah.
And With regard to certifications, all I can really speak to is B Corp certification. Mm. That joining the dots here, that I would say is a wonderful holistic assessment, but it's, I can't really comment on the broad and the siloing. But what I will say that kind of joins the dots and is across the board relevant maybe to how the answering the question of how do we grow the purpose-driven movement in business, I would say most importantly, it's all about giving equal or some, at the very least, some attention, as critical as any other aspect of the way we're going about doing business, is to develop your people, most importantly, your leaders. You know, when you help them develop, it's not just skills or knowledge or, you know, we think of self or development in the workplace really as skill driven. You know, 75% of the team at the company that I spend a lot of my time at are all, you know, technical. They focus on their learning around their technical, mechanical, you know, skills. And then business leaders, they're focusing on business principles and operational things and tweaking everything. But are we as interested in and do we know the impact of, you know, development of people and how critical that is? And I would say that it's as critical as any other part or endeavor of this movement, because we know that human consciousness evolving will influence change. And, you know, it's just really simple, but it's rarely highlighted. I read an article back in October. It just came into my LinkedIn feed and I loved it. So I found it because I wanted to point to maybe from a credibility standpoint, that according to Dr. Tasha Urich and her team and the research they've done, and she's written a book, and she's an organizational psychologist, and that's usually the professionals that I pay attention to, that self-awareness in her research has showed up as one of the most important skills to work on, particularly for those in positions of leadership. You know, and what they found in the studies they've done is that while 90% of people claim to be self-aware, many of us think we are, research really shows that with that definition of self-awareness, only 10 to 15% actually fit the criteria. So what does that tell you? We can't take this lightly, that people are conscious, aware. You know, and on a much broader scale, I'll just go over this because I think it's important. The definition of self-awareness really is the ability to see ourselves clearly, to understand who we are, how we see others, and how we fit into the world. And it's both external and internal. You know, you have the external part being knowing others and how they see you. So there's so many skills that are critical to learning that we need to focus on the development of inside of our environments and for the people in our environments, you know, empathy, communication skills, again, a growth mindset, embracing vulnerability. This is all being talked about, but how much of it is really being practiced? And trusted and honest feedback. I'm working with my team right now in a program that's trying to launch and create a more of a culture of feedback, and is really making a difference in stimulating a lot more honesty. We're in a culture that breeds nice cultures, right?
Yeah.
But we step over things as a result. So, you know, I'll share the link to that article because I think it's really relevant, and it also gives leaders some very things to address to be sure they're really developing their leadership. But can I talk about something on a much broader scale?
Go for it.
That I think is important because that's the micro. I think the two other things I thought about in this area is other avenues for opportunity. One of them is a bit of a real human contact is another. We saw this at Assembly, the energy of this arises when people are really coming together.
Yep.
And we all know that we're facing new ways of working and teams aren't spending so much time together, but human contact is suffering. It's actually taking away, maybe that's an energy bleed, you know, to an environment.
Yep. Yep.
You know, they're taking away from the ways in which we think collectively, operate collectively. It silos people more than organizations. So that's one thing, you know, increasing, looking for every opportunity to get back into real human life interactions with people. But the other thing I think I'll leave probably more as a inquiry for people, and it's a little bit something I can get on my soapbox about, but I think it's, you know, it kind of question how much, because we're so globally connected and we have such access to things globally. And if you think, you know, we want to have influence in this movement, we want to make sure we're reaching everyone.
Yes.
But what can suffer when we're always thinking big and from kind of a growth mindset, or maybe I'm going to call this not a growth mindset because that's sort of in the psychological dimension, but in an sort of our penchant or addiction to growth as a paradigm, more economically speaking. You know, when we're trying to make change and have influence, we can get more positioned in that going bigger, broader. And it leads us to the sort of pitfall, or can be a pitfall, of, are we really doing the work at home? Are we really doing the work personally, individually, locally, in our communities? How can we be trusted to, or ask people to change, or ask us to change things on a broader scale, if we're actually not effectively doing so at individual and local and community level? It's hard to say this because we're faced both with this urgency. And so that means we want to broadcast and make as much change as possible. But I would say that if we do well what we do in focusing on unique spheres of influence, most importantly, and ensure we do that first, the expansion of impact will follow. And thinking on this scale is important. And I think sometimes it suffers. It's a bit like, don't tell someone how to do something unless you're willing to first have looked at that change for yourself.
Yes, an excellent point. Let's shift the focus then and say, where are you seeing some amazing leaders that are really driving some inspiring projects and initiatives? Which of these have you come across recently, Lisa, that are creating some great positive social change?
Oh, Melbourne-based. I think one of my first kind of local thought leaders is someone I worked with early in the Be Local, Matt Sykes, who is the founder of Regen Projects. And he was always, to the point I just made, he was the person who was, you know, his like LinkedIn posts or his social media was always showing him doing the work, you know, going to his local beach and picking up trash. But he's had impact on a massive scale. And he's been a part of this real, a founding member, really, of something that's become quite big. And that's Regen Melbourne, you know, the collective of so many different organizations that are working here in Melbourne, you know, for a regenerative change in us as a city, but more broadly in the state of Victoria. He grew up in Gippsland and does projects all around here locally and around the world, but really focusing on the Indigenous wisdom and bringing key stakeholders together to, you know, really collaborate on change. He's done some amazing work. Gosh, just last night, I went to a screening of Uncharitable by Dovetail Social Enterprise, and so many amazing social enterprises in Melbourne particularly. But it's the story of Dan Pallotta and several leaders who are shifting the framework in how we operate sort of in the vis-a-vis funding in the charity sector.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, was it inspiring. So it's so inspiring to be around social endeavors that are making a difference, and how, you know, they integrate and can be served by that, the symbiosis that can happen when business can take up the support of a social enterprise or charitable causes, and how much meaning that brings into the workplace. So, and of course, I think positive intelligence is being done everywhere around the world. And I love this program. It's being done in organizations throughout the U.S. mostly. And while here I lead and facilitate an individual, a program really just for the public, we can do this work. And it's beginning to emerge with a number of people who are capable and primed for bringing that work to the organization and doing the kind of change work around mental fitness and works. I also, you mentioned trauma earlier, you know, I also really appreciate the sort of the trend that's happening in our conversation of dispelling that we need to not bring conversations around trauma. I think this conversation is becoming more mainstream, I guess I should say. That it is impacting and having us take a look at how we can influence well-being and mental health issues as they creep up. They're not going away. No. So I like the work of Gabor Mate and the movie that featured him called The Wisdom of Trauma. Yeah, those are just some things, you know, that have piqued my interest of late.
What about some books or other resources then, just to finish off then, Lisa? Are there anything else you'd like to share with the audience?
You know, my memory fails me sometimes, but so I always have to just think, what have I mostly been reading really recently? Well, I've just picked up Adam Grant's Hidden Potential. He's a fascinating organizational psychologist. I love his work, every one of his books. Malcolm Gladwell is another one. But Adam Grant's book, Hidden Potential, is, I think, a good book for all leaders, really. You know, another one that I think is on the softer side of sort of that human dimension, Brené Brown's most recent work. She's done great work, particularly Dare to Lead, and applying that into the business space. But her Atlas of the Heart is a volume. It's like an encyclopedia that I think should belong in every household. It gives language to the emotional landscape. And when we're generally thinking beings, 70% or 80% of our where we traffic in and where we operate is in that thinking cognitive space, and people are less schooled on their emotions and understanding how to talk about them.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant, as I said, like an encyclopedia, and I think it belongs everywhere. I'll recommend one other book, which I think is important piece of work. It's quite old, but it's a book called The Art of Possibility, Rosamund and Benjamin Zander. And it's kind of an indispensable read on transforming our professional and personal lives. And I don't know, I traffic in the currency of possibility mostly. And this is one of the things that allows us to generate hope and manage with what we've got, but also with this hugely creative brain we have, when you get to the importance of possibility, I just can't recommend it enough that people understand how to get there. Yeah.
Lisa,
I'm reading.
Those are some great resources, and I've highly enjoyed our conversation today. It's just really highlighted some great points for both myself and the audience to reflect on, and some golden nuggets in there. So thank you so much for sharing your generous insights and time. And I can't wait to see you at the Reignite Retreat in July that Impact Boom and Good North are running. So if the audience are keen to get an EOI in, there's only a few spots left. They can head to impactboom.org and check that out. But Lisa, it's going to be lovely to collaborate more into the future. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Wonderful to speak with you.
Thanks for listening to Impact Boom. You'll find links to the initiatives, people, and resources mentioned in this podcast on impactboom.org. Please leave your comments below. And remember, we'll be publishing fresh inspiration and insights to help you create positive impact every week on the website, Facebook page, and Twitter.